I should point out that we had the great privilege of having Sir Charles Court in our workshop. Now, Sir Charles is an eminent politician of many years standing, but he is used to the professional Hansard reporters. So if I've missed any of the words of wisdom that Sir Charles gave us, I apologize in advance. The subject of our workshop was business, politics, ethics, and government. Whilst agreeing that the four subject headings were a strange but inevitable topic, we agreed on the dangers of passing judgment on countries in comparison with one's own. Much discussion led to agreement that accountability, disclosure, and justice, represented by the legal system, were the three most influential factors on our subjects. In responding to the topics, we suggest 1, ethics in business, in many ways the most important. We acknowledge it's very easy to be ethical when everything is going well. It's more accepted now for ethics to be included in management training with a holistic model dealing with complexities. Governments, too, have a role in ensuring that regulations for business operation include social goals. We believe that ethics in business would highlight the difference between creating wealth and making money, stressing that good corporate ethics lead to good financial results with sustainable development. We discussed the role and responsibility of the church in dominant religious countries, suggesting that the theology of liberation must be followed by the theology of development. We decided that how business created wealth is more important than its distribution, as an example, destroying lifestyles. And it is important also to recognize the importance of small and medium businesses and their role in the community. Turning now to ethics and government and politics. Government must be sensitive to the needs of the people. And whilst wealth must be generated to the poor, those in poverty must be educated in self-help. In recognizing that politics is the exercise of power, we noted that it could be used for coercion and an influence for good or evil on business. Whilst there can be no business without bureaucracy, we recognize that business closely associated with government can become very powerful by that association. Both business and government are judged on service. Government by voters and business by stakeholders. The ethic of truly open government, no secret dealings, public disclosures, and insistence that contracts between government and business are open to public scrutiny are vital. Freedom of the press is significant in the control of corruption, and that freedom, of course, must be used with responsibility. Whilst acknowledging that ethics and morality may take second place to survival in poorer countries, it is vital that the importance of ethics are shown in the earliest possible education process. In summarizing, therefore, we decided that disclosure and communication at all levels and in all aspects was the key to the solution for success for human development in business, politics, ethics, and government. Disclosure should be made effective by the development of a communications network throughout the whole fabric of society, encompassing government, business, and the public arena. The dominance of ethics, personal, commercial, bureaucratic, and political, was the paramount influence, and the education of ethical behavior at an early age should be a priority in secondary and tertiary education systems throughout the region. Thank you very much.
The next report is from Kung Chira on a philosophy towards labor.
Mr. Chairman, this group has three discussants. Dr. Thomas Hahn, Mr. Ian Spicer, and Mr. Manata, who is represented by Mr. John West, and Reverend J.B. Bauer as a rapporteur, and about 10 other members in the workshop. Here are the following points of discussion. First of all, the group has discussed the definition of labor and suggest two kinds of definitions. One would be a broad definition of labor, basically including agricultural worker and urban informal sector, which although not really deal with business directly, but of course in terms of human development is very important. So the group agreed that business leader also should look into those types of labor and attempt to upgrade their living standard. The more narrow definition deals with industrial worker, including the service sector, which is part of the organized sector, which is the main focus of our discussion. We also agree that Asia as a whole is moving more and more into industrialization with an open economy where we have to compete in the world market, and also the adoption of technology. Well, in view of this, part of the problem of labor and management relation is the practice in which is not very conducive to economic and social development, namely they usually labor relation has been in conflict rather than cooperation. And part of this is because Asia is relatively newcomer into industrialization and perhaps influenced great deal by the Western concept of labor relation. Another problem probably is the lack of understanding towards labor relation, especially among older generation of business leaders. So we suggest that in order to move our society into the new dynamic world, perhaps this is a consensus among the group that a new philosophy is to make cooperation among workers and employer as much as possible. There has been discussion, of course, about common goals, common objectives, communications, consultation between workers on one hand and the employers on the other hand. Of course, although there is no debate about the new direction and new philosophy, but there has been a debate about how do we go about it. This is something that I hope there is enough thinking among our groups, especially on process of thinking, that further concrete evidence of labor relation in the cooperative manner could be obtained. Of course, there are several evidence of individual companies, and in fact in some other countries, where cooperation among workers and trade union and also employer has been obtained. So here are the several perhaps concrete recommendations that the group agree. One is, in making business plan, the company should have human resource plan, namely to upgrade their skill, as well as human development plan, that is to make work environment harmonized with their lifestyle. So human resource planning and human development planning basically are two different things, but with the business strategies involved. Secondly, we hope that in order to make cooperation effective, the top professional manager, namely the manager of the highest level in the company should pay attention to the labor problems. Often enough, we know that labor problem is left in the hand of perhaps low-level managers. And even though they are concerned with the labor problem, but their influence in the company has not been extremely effective. Third, perhaps the philosophy toward labor should not be confined only to employers, workers, and government. We should try to disseminate the philosophy, the new philosophy, as much towards the whole society. And perhaps one way of doing it is to educate people, especially to educational system. And fourthly, we hope that the new philosophy of cooperation would be an ability to enlarge the existing pie, namely labor and management should attempt to increase productivity, so that this is something that we agree completely, that the labor relation in the future would be considered a positive sum game, namely the labor and the employers win both, rather than zero sum where one gains at the expense of another. Finally, Mr. Chairman, we feel that the subject of perhaps what we call it new philosophy or innovative system of labor relation is so important that we hope that in the Congress of the Fifth Congress in Bangkok, there will be an attempt to highlight some of the examples of companies in the region who have effectively conduct labor relation along the line that we recommended. And perhaps before that, we should exchange information as much as we can, because we know that even though we wish to have a healthy and cooperative labor relation, but the task ahead of us is how to do it effectively. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The report of his paper, the paper of Kung Chira, has been reproduced and will be available. Limited only for the members. Can we now call on Mr. Lee Kai Ming to report on the workshop of business and the consumer?
Mr. Chairman, we had a very lively discussion because by virtue everyone is a consumer, no matter he or she is a businessman or a housewife or he's a supplier or a buyer or seller. And there were two papers presented at our discussion group, and in the two papers the group were informed of the basis of consumer protection, which consists of mainly the consumer's right to know, the right to choose, the right to be informed, the right to be heard, and the right to be redressed. And there are also the guidelines formulated by the United Nations to protect the right of the consumer in 1985. These guidelines referred to also to the safety, product and services information, consumer choice, consumer redresses. The business was also advised how to improve the product safety, product and service information, and how to facilitate consumer redresses. The history of changing relationship between the consumer and the business was also explored. And in the paper, it was revealed that there was significant influences by the large corporations on the consumer. In the paper, the problem of whether the consumer sovereignty still exists were examined in great details, and this led to the agreement on six basic guidelines which form a checklist to be used by the consumer and business in determining the relationship between them. The basic guidelines are: 1. How do we know what we are told is true? 2. How does our culture relate to the product? 3. What freedom of choice do we have? 4. Is our individual and social human dignity enhanced? 5. How far are we able to do our own thing in our society? 6. How is quality of human interaction improved? And in the discussions, the following points had emerged and also agreed upon. The first point is, there is a particular point dealt with the problem of false imitation of goods. This call upon the standardization of quality amongst international brand products, for instance, cameras, watches, or some of the electronics products. The second point is, in majority of Asian countries, the level of services and human development were all well governed by the degree of regulations by the government. So a significant government regulatory organization was considered to be necessary where consumers are very much unable to appreciate or understand their own rights or know how to protect themselves. So the group recommended the United Nations guidelines for consumer protection should be followed in deciding what sort of regulatory system should be used. 3, the emphasis must be on the consumer education. That's to say, government education program based on the material which is successful in integrating both consumer and consumer interests should be introduced. And a good example is found in Australia. There's a Choice magazine published by the Australian Consumer Association, which gives very comprehensive information to the consumer. And the group also came up with a recommendation, that's to say, to encourage manufacturers to abide by cell regulatory regulations so as to protect the rights of the consumers and to avoid the establishment of large-scale regulatory bodies. These are the conclusions and the recommendations made by the group. Thank you very much.
Thank you. May I now call on Kunying Sasima to give us the report on the financial structure and human development.
I survived from this workshop much better than I thought I would. As a matter of fact, I thoroughly enjoyed the session tremendously because we had a wonderful group consists of experienced and intelligent gentlemen, and most of all, we were very fortunate to have Mr. Jaime, the Secretary of Finance, with us. So what more could we want? My special thank to Mr. Andy Finan, who acted as our discussant, and Mr. Ian Lacey, who came to my rescue because as a rapporteur, because I must have scared my rapporteur, Mr. Andrews, away. He did not show up. The topic of our discussion was financial structure of human development. The topic was presented in three scenes: in global level, national level, meaning stressing on the small and medium-sized industry and how the financial structure can assist them better. And we go down to the business level, touching on the problem of losing staff and training new human resource to facilitate the upcoming industrialization of developing countries. While we need to recognize the global economic crisis, we can really only attempt to discuss the implications of it rather than pretending to find a solution to it. How can a nation's financial system, including government incentives, banks, and the philosophy of individual businesses, assist enterprises to achieve human development goals? We concentrated on businesses which have grown past their survival phase and which we could afford to devote funds to such purposes. Japan's transition from feudal system to modern business is helpful. As an example, when the country was opened up, there were many ideologists with a long-term view. They invested accordingly, not like modern entrepreneurs who expect a return within 5 years or less. Japan still has a strong culture supporting lifetime employment, and shareholders are less insistent on immediate return on their investment than in the West. In Japan, we have a Japanese participant, many cooperative credit unions supply funds for small businesses along with both government and private regional banks. Today, many city banks are also taking a renewed interest in small business, using either property or sometimes share equity as collateral. In respect to the international aid, the Japanese Overseas Economics Cooperation Fund provides soft loan funding for training entrepreneurs in small business enterprises in less developing countries. This is a government-to-government arrangement. Then we have the Australian input. In Australia, the Commonwealth Development Bank supplements other banks rather than competing with them. It lends on the basis of how it sees the prospects of success for the venture, rather than requiring security. Sometimes it may take equity. Its other role is in providing advice and assistance, e.g. management training, to help ensure the success of the small businesses to which it lends. It also has a big emphasis on staff training itself for its own staff. Other factors relevant to financial structure brought up by Thailand participants were tax incentives for training people, both in basic technical skills and the management skills. The need to encourage saving to increase available capital locally. Reduce custom rates on imports of productive equipment. Address to the problem of losing staffs and human resource training. They offer the desirability of larger businesses subcontracting to local small business entrepreneurs so that they help them to providing the worker capital and the marketing expertise and arrangements. The role of some large companies in providing considerable input of technical training and social facilities such as hospitals in developing countries was noted as being very valuable. In conclusion, we felt that it was necessary to shift the emphasis of economics decisive away from simply financial accountability, where it has lended to be in the past, towards accountability for human development. We need to monitor performance of the business and government in both area and also to have our guard against exploitation in both. Thank you very much.
May I call on Gastier Pigas, Dean of the Asian Institute of Management, to give us the report on managers of Asia.
Mr. Chairman, fellow participants, the first thing that we agreed upon in our workshop is that it was very hard to agree as to what an Asian manager looked like. Because we realized that when we say Asian manager, we might be speaking about a manager in China, a manager in Japan, a manager in the Malay countries, and a manager in South Asia. However, in our discussions, it became quite clear that one of the threads that was running through much of our concern about the Asian manager was the observation that in Asia, many of the enterprises are still under the category of family-controlled enterprises, and that these enterprises are now beginning to move towards a wider corporate structure. So, one of the challenges for the Asian management system is to establish new relationships within these companies and the introduction of professional